to your Epsom & Newell Talking Newspaper for Thursday, May the 17th, 2018. Issue number 2181. Our readers today are Camilla Hughes, James Dubois, and Diane Ross. Our recordist is Richard Fairhurst, and this is Penny with the leading article from the Epsom & Newell Guardian under the headline, Player Left Paralysed Will Not Be Defeated. A footballer has ambitions for the Paralympics after becoming partially paralysed in a tragic incident. Chris Keir, 27, was a striker at the AFC Ewell, his team for 6 years, but dislocated his neck in three places after a freak accident on Saturday, April 14th. The surgeon told me he'd never seen this type of injury from football before, said Chris. The ball bounced up in the air. I went up to head it like I'd done so many times before, but I ended up on the ground and my body went into pins and needles all over. I couldn't feel the lower half of my body. At St George's Hospital, Chris spent 6 hours in surgery, and bolts were put into his neck, and then he was in intensive care for 8 days. I had a chest infection prior to this, so I was really struggling to breathe, said Chris. 4 days in, Chris received shocking news. The doctor told him that he had a complete spinal cord injury. This means it's very unlikely Chris will be able to walk again, although he is keen to start swimming as soon as he's fit enough. The hashtag CK2024 on Chris's GoFundMe page referenced his ambition to complete in the 2024 Paralympics. He said, currently I am on the waiting list for Specialist Spinal Rehabilitation Centre. The Paralympians use their sporting facilities, so naturally I am going to be gunning for a gold medal. Chris's teammates have been fundraising tirelessly for a custom-made wheelchair and other equipment that he will need. So far, they have raised more than £12,000. Chris said it was only because the referee David Sanford put pressure on his neck after the advice of a junior doctor that he still has use of his hands. I was begging him to take it off because it was so painful, but if he hadn't, I would have moved my neck. When he then saw them posed in For You CK t-shirts, Chris said, I just started crying like a little baby. Chris said he's been visited by every single one who, along with his parents and girlfriend Daisy, have been fantastic. Driving straight from France to the hospital, his parents have been there every day since. Chris is feeling far from defeatist. Mentally, I'm doing well, he said. My life plans remain the same. I still intend to see the world and spend the rest of my life with Daisy. Donate to help Chris at gofundme.com/Chris Keir.
Hello, this is Camilla. Transport Minister makes £1 million announcement. Cash boost for transport groups. Transport Secretary Chris Grayling has announced £1 million in funding for regional transport organisations in the south east of England. This investment goes to Transport for South East, a sub-national transport body, which is hoped to make the improvements which make the biggest difference to local people. These plans will allow people in Surrey to influence government investment decisions at a more regional level, filling the existing gap between national and local transport authorities. Chris Grayling, Conservative MP for Epsom and Ewell and Transport Secretary, said this government is committed to empowering regions across the UK by giving them a stronger influence over the future of transport in their area. This will help us build the modern and effective links our country needs, improving journey times, boosting housing development and economic growth, and getting people and goods where they need to be faster, safely and more comfortably. Investing in England's economic heartland and transport for the South East means that those best placed to make decisions have our support to put forward ambitious proposals for the future. He added that the government will continue to work closely with these organisations as they develop transport strategies which help their regions seize their potential. Councillor Keith Glazier, Chairman of Transport for the South East, said this is a great step forward for our region's transport system and all the people who rely on it. We're grateful to the DfT for this vote of confidence in Transport for the South East and in the work we're doing with them to ensure that we have an innovative and efficient network for decades to come.
Hello, this is James. The next item appeared on the website getsurrey.co.uk. Langley Vale Wood could get a major upgrade. A £9 million woodland project to mark the centenary of the First World War with a base in Ashted is nearing the final stages of planning. The Woodland Trust hopes to attract around 110,000 visitors a year to Langley Vale Centenary Wood in Headley Road. Plans for a visitors' centre, car park, memorial park, playground and paths have been submitted to Mill Valley District Council. The Trust has an ambitious project of planting 200,000 native trees at the 640-acre site, including beech, rowan, hawthorn and oak. Thousands of trees have already been planted by local school children and residents, and now the Trust is seeking planning permission to create the visitors' centre in a bid to attract people from wider afield. The site at Langley Vale contains a significant proportion of ancient woodland in the form of sheep walk, Downsview Wood, Gillett's Wood, Littlehurst Wood and Greathurst Wood, which will be incorporated into the wider centenary woodland area. The Trust is creating four First World War centenary woods in all parts of the UK, with Langley Vale being England's centre. The others are in Coed Fos Las in Wales, Dreghorn Woods in Scotland and Brackfield Wood in Northern Ireland. It is hoped that 3 million native trees will be planted across the four sites in memory of the millions of lives lost and affected by the war that lasted from 1914 to 1918. A report by the Trust, submitted as part of the application, said, "As part of the Langley Vale Wood project, it is necessary to provide car and cycle parking, a visitors' centre, memorial area, play space, hard surfaced paths and multi-user paths to develop the opportunity for outdoor recreation, conservation and education, as well as creating a tranquil area for quiet reflection and remembrance." The Trust carried out a consultation over the application in Ashted. Residents living nearby were worried about the amount of extra traffic it would bring to narrow lanes in the area, but the Trust said signs will divert traffic to avoid Headley Village. In a letter outlining the objections of residents, Roger Bennett of Ashted Residents Association said the group had concerns with the route detailed by the Trust for visitors arriving by car or coach. A date has not yet been set for the application to be discussed by the Development Control Panel.
Hello, this is Diane, the Gold Age pensioner. 73-year-old Malcolm claims powerlifting crown. A Redhill pensioner has won two golds and two bronze medals for lifting a combined 377.5 kilograms at the European Masters Powerlifting Championships. Plumber Malcolm Bainbridge proved that age is just a number in Helsingborg, Sweden, when he took the title of European Masters Powerlifting Champion in the 70 to 80 year category. Weighing in at only 65.10 kilograms, Malcolm managed to lift a total of 377.5 kilograms, popping a 117.5 kilogram squat, a neat 80-kilogram bench press, and a ridiculous 180-kilogram deadlift, nearly triple his body weight. Malcolm, 73, won an individual gold medal for the deadlift, along with two bronze medals for the bench press and the squat. His combined score for these lifts gave him the overall gold and confirmed his title. He said, "Training is the main thing. I think a lot of people have a bit of a gift for it. I haven't got a gift for much, but I've always been able to do it since I was 21. I've been doing it for 50 odd years. When I was 45, I lifted a 225 kilogram squat, 127 kilogram bench, and a 247 kilogram deadlift. Malcolm has been powerlifting on and off since he was 21 years old, and the sport was a comparatively young one. He has since been to 4 world championships, taking the title in 2003, and now trains 3 times a week alongside a club of 8 others who have formed in the past 18 months at the YMCA East Surrey Gym in Redhill. He said, "I went back to powerlifting 18 months ago. I was down at the YMCA training on my own and a chap came up and asked me to help him, and now there are 8 of us. We've got a little group going down there and we're looking to the future to keep it going if I ever have to pack up." With a string of wins to his name over the years and a spread in the Surrey Mirror in the 1980s, Malcolm is no stranger to success. He said, "I've always been competitive. It's important to me to try and win. I used to do a lot of cycling, but it was getting a bit cold, so I got back into the gym. I get a lot of satisfaction from comparing my achievements to others, and it really pushes me on to train with other like-minded people. I don't find it difficult. Powerlifting is great fun." As a non-smoker and teetotaler, Malcolm believes that his healthy lifestyle plays a vital part in his success. "It's important to me to show other people that winning isn't about taking performance-enhancing drugs. There is no reason why someone can't do anything. If you want to do something, you can do it. Obviously, I wanted to do it and I can do it. I wanted these 2 records in Sweden and I trained accordingly to try and get them. I'd like to inspire those who are getting involved in the sport to embrace a clean image," says Malcolm. The competitive pensioner has no plans to start taking it easy, and though he also enjoys cycling with Redhill Cycling Club, powerlifting is his passion and his focus is very much on future competitions. Despite being invited to the 2018 World Championship event in Calgary this June, Malcolm's next goal will be the 2019 European Masters next March in Hungary, which he is already working towards, both as a plumber and a powerlifter. He said, "I'm working to fund my hobby and I do a fair bit of cycling. That all takes money as well. It just keeps my head above water with the expenses. I like the job and I've not got a massive pension, and if you want to do things then you have to fund yourself. No one's going to pay for you. We've got Budapest coming up next spring and Sweden in June. Our flights and hotel are the best part of £500. It's a really amateur sport unless you've made a name for yourself. On present form, his chances look promising indeed."
"Please help me live so I can see my Luca grow. Mum, given just 9 months to live, is putting her hope in treatment abroad. A mother is preparing to say goodbye to her son after being told that a rare cancer she thought she had defeated has spread, but she was holding on to hope that further treatment could at least prolong her life. Ornella Kotupanova, 30, who goes also by her artist name Ornella Soul, has beaten cancer in her sinuses in 2015 and defied the odds and predictions of her doctors by having her son, Luca Jeffrey, 2 months after being told she was cancer-free. But during the young designer's routine review on April the 25th this year to check the cancer had not returned, her doctors told her bluntly that the cancer has unexpectedly spread to the bones in her legs, hips and lower back, and she has 6 to 9 months to live. Now her greatest fear is that she will not only miss Luca growing up, but that he will not remember her at all. She said, "The truth is, I desperately want to live. Knowing that I might die and he won't even remember me is the worst pain I have ever experienced." She says an oncologist told her that the cancer is too aggressive and advanced to be cured, and she was recommended palliative care and pain management. Ornella, who has lived in Mount Pleasant Road, Caterham Valley for the past few years, has said, "I'm a very vibrant and lively person. I can't believe I'm sick. After last time, I'm used to being in pain, but knowing it's eating parts of me and taking over my body is something that really gets to me. It's a harsh reality when they tell you that you're dying and you don't feel like you are. I have so much strength and life, I don't feel like I want to give up. The sinus cancer was defeated, but it quietly took root in her spine, hips and lower back during her pregnancy, resulting in a new diagnosis of stage T4M1 neuroendocrine carcinoma metastasis, bone cancer." She said, "I've never heard the word remission because I was told the cancer had gone. My pregnancy and breastfeeding interfered with the planned full body scans, so when I started experiencing the symptoms and pain, the doctors neglected my complaints and said it was because of the birth, so they never investigated. I'm very positive and strong and independent, so I don't look sick. I love smiling. I suck it up and keep going through the pain, so doctors have missed my illness. It is a shame. Despite the prognosis, Ornella wants to undergo further treatment in the hope of surviving or at least prolonging her life. Meanwhile, she continues to raise her son, who is now 1 year and 8 months old. Knowing you might not be around for your boy and seeing him grow breaks my heart every time I cuddle him and every time he smiles. I never thought I would be 30 years, 4 months old and have to write my own will and decide who to be guardian of my little Luca. I keep waiting to wake up from this horrible nightmare. I want more than anything to see my son grow up and hear him say Mama and teach him to play basketball, teach him to draw, play the piano, take him to see music, travel the world, see him fall in love and see him become a father and so much more. Ornella, who describes chemotherapy as like swimming through treacle and radiotherapy as even worse, has found 3 oncology specialists who will treat her. She believes her main hope lies with the Hallwang Clinic, a private oncology clinic in Germany, where she intends to undergo pioneering treatment to help her in her fight. However, this does not come cheap. Her treatment is going to cost up to £120,000. Ornella has launched a GoFundMe page that she hopes will help save her life. Even if this doesn't cure it, and it gives me some kind of hope that I'm going to have a little bit longer, she said. A spokeswoman for Hallwang Clinic said it looks at each individual case and tailors treatment to that person. Individual mutations, amplification, translocations presented by the patient's tumour cells are studied. She added, identification of these allows us to specifically target them through a broad range of therapeutic options, depending on the outcome. You have to look at the tumour itself to understand what targeted treatment the patient needs. A treatment that might work for one patient does not necessarily work for another patient, even though they both have the same type of cancer. Ornella will be recording her journey on her Instagram account. You can follow her at @thegirlfightingcancer. To support her treatment, visit www.gofundme.com/desire to live, all one word.
Surgery saves the life of Flinny the Hero Dog, a former police cocker spaniel with a diseased heart. A hero former police dog that protected the Queen and kept people safe during the London 2012 Olympics, has undergone life-saving surgery at a vet's practice in Bletchingley. North Down Specialist Referrals operated on Flinny after it was discovered he had a badly damaged and diseased heart. The 9-year-old Cocker Spaniel spent his career sniffing out explosives to keep people safe from danger. However, just as Flinny was set to retire from active duty, it was discovered he had a ticking bomb of his own. A cardiology expert at North Downs identified his heart problems and he then went under the knife to have a pacemaker fitted. Flinny, who safeguarded Heathrow Airport and the Wimbledon Tennis Championships in his career, is now bouncing around as usual after the successful procedure. His owner, who is also his Metropolitan Police handler, so asked not to be named for security reasons, said, "Flinny was always a super fit and energetic dog, which he needed to be in his specialist line of work. We were always busy and active, but at the end of last summer, I noticed he was needing a rest after exercise, lying down away from me, panting, something he'd never done before. His annual health check highlighted that he had a very low heart rate, which I put down to the fact he had been in the car and inactive for most of the day. But when I checked his pulse again a week later, it was down to just 40 beats a minute, about half of what it should be. He was in a very bad way, something that had been masked by the fact that he was such a fit dog. A surgeon at North Downs performed an electrocardiogram to study his heart rhythm and said he needed a pacemaker fitted as soon as possible. Cardiologist specialist Joel Silva, who performed the operation, said, "To implant the pacemaker, we inserted a lead into Flinny's jugular vein and into his heart. The lead was then connected to a pacemaker, which we had placed under the skin of his neck. The settings on the device were adjusted to suit Flinny's specific needs. In fact, his particular pacemaker is able to detect his movements and increases his heart rate when he walks or exercises and slows it down when he rests. It's working very well, and so is Flinny. So everyone is delighted." Flinny's handler said he had been back to his old self since the operation. He said, "We were a great team and forged an amazing bond. I spent more time with him than I did with my family. We would work all day together, and then he'd come home with me too, because it was vital we could react as quickly as possible to any bomb threat, day or night. He's just retired, and there's no doubt he's earned it, but he's not taking it easy. He's as lively as ever. It's great that he can now enjoy life and retirement to the full."
Sun shines down on brilliant fair. The annual Banstead May Queen Fair took place on Saturday, May the 5th. Ruby Doohan, 9, a student of St Anne's Catholic Primary School, was crowned 2018's May Queen. She arrived in a Bentley convertible with her prince and attendants to be crowned in the All Saints Church orchard in the High Street. Ruby said, "Thank you to everyone who came along to the Mayfair and supported me in raising money for the Children's Trust. I really enjoyed walking into the arena where everyone was cheering and clapping. I felt very special." The coronation marked the finale of a more than 500-strong parade, which included local schools. The 2018 Banstead Village Fair, which has been running since 1985, was packed with market stalls and entertainment over the May Day bank holiday weekend. Starting in 1985, the Banstead May Queen coronation has become one of the biggest community events in the village, raising £150,000 for charities across the years. On average, around 30 groups, clubs and schools join in the parade along Banstead High Street.
Concert violinist, follow the heart. A violinist has urged aspiring players to follow their heart as he prepares for a Surrey concert. Internationally renowned British violinist Jack Liebeck will be performing Mendelssohn's Violin Concerto with the Royal Philharmonic Orchestra at Dorking Hall next month. Mr. Liebeck has played on award-winning film soundtracks and garnered a host of prizes, including a Classical Brit in 2010. "Orchestral music has a power that really has to be witnessed in person to appreciate," he said. "I challenge anyone to go and hear a professional orchestra and not be awestruck by the emotional power and skill involved in the performance. To see many people working as one with such coordination is truly impressive." Mendelssohn's Violin Concerto is one of the most famous pieces in the classical canon. Mr. Liebeck said, "I first performed Mendelssohn's Violin Concerto when I was 15 years old, and have played it so many times that it almost seems impossible to imagine that there was a time that the piece didn't exist. It is a piece of great heart, subtlety and light-hearted virtuosity, and it is always a joy to perform. Mr. Liebeck's career highlights include being a soloist on the score for the 2011 Jane Eyre, and also on the Oscar, Golden Globe and BAFTA-nominated soundtrack for Anna Karenina. There's a history of string playing in my family going back generations, but most of those relatives sadly died before I started, he said. I have a distant memory of going to a concert and seeing the violins in the orchestra and thinking, I could do that. His advice to aspiring players is to follow your heart with discipline and determination. Jack Liebeck will perform Mendelssohn's Violin Concerto with the Royal Philharmonic Orchestra on Friday, June the 8th at Dorking Halls, and tickets can be found at dorkinghalls.co.uk.
Trailblazing Dads set for an Isle of Wight challenge. A group is aiming to raise £15,000 for school and charity. A group of dads from Epsom are donning their walking boots to complete an epic charity challenge. The team of 28, known as the Trailblazers, are attempting to walk, unguided, around the Isle of Wight coastal path in just 2 days, on June the 8th and 9th. They're hoping to raise £15,000, which will be split between the purchase of outdoor play equipment for St Martin's School and local charity Harrison's Fund. The charity works to fund research into Duchenne, a rare genetic condition which affects all the muscles in the body, causing them to waste away. James Faulkner, age 43, said, "We all have children at St Martin's School, and unfortunately, a number of their classmates have been diagnosed with Duchenne. As dads, our hearts go out to what these families have to face every day, so we are determined to complete this challenge for them and do them proud. We've been training every weekend and building up our distances as we get nearer to the big day. A number of us have walked long distances before having completed challenges such as the Three Peaks, a 155-mile foot race in 6 days across the Atacama Desert, the Welsh 3000, Everest Base Camp, the Inca Trail, and walking up Mount Kenya and Mount Kinabalu. But there are a few, however, for whom this will be their first challenge. But they will be well supported by the rest of the team. Aiming to walk 38 miles on the first day from Knighton to Cowes in a clockwise route, then the dads will trek 31 miles on the next day from Knighton to Cowes anti-clockwise. The 28 dads range in age from 35 to 50 years old. And to make the challenge even harder, the team are undertaking it completely self-navigated without the benefit of a guide and aim to achieve it in 48 hours. Lucy Roberts, fundraising and campaigns executive at Harrison's Fund, said, "We wish the dads the very best of luck with their challenge. It sounds like an exciting one. All the money raised by them means so much to a small charity such as ours and will help us to fund research into better treatments so our children can have a life past childhood. To support the Trailblazers, please visit mydonate.bt.com/fundraisers/IOW Trailblazers.
Volunteers help to transform hut. Work on spider-ridden facility for storage. A theatre charity that serves the special needs community has had an army of volunteers to turn its spider-ridden hut into a proper storage room. Head to Head Theatre, based in Ashdod, welcomed a group from Kingswood-based Fidelity International to carry out the work. Full-time volunteer for Head to Head, Annie Rhodes Steer, said it was inspiring to see. They scrubbed and painted and had great fun moving some of our sensory props, their favourites being Widow Twankey's mangle and a Roman catapult. The charity, which boasts among its patrons Monty Python's Terry Jones, puts on shows and events for people with disabilities, often going to schools to perform for children and volunteers are grateful to the renovation team for their help. Mrs. Rhodes Steer said, "Fidelity International support is a great example of what large corporations can do for small charities such as ours." A grant covering the first 6 months of the unit's rent was given to Head to Head by the Leather Sellers Company Charitable Fund, but more money is needed to secure its longer-term use. Ms. Rhodes Steer said, "The storage unit is vital. Previously, volunteers stored our props, costumes and sets in their attics, garages and garden sheds. Whenever we started a new production, it was a nightmare pulling all the necessary pieces together. Now we have everything under one roof and there's even a little space for rehearsals, which is an added bonus. The charity's next production will be Peter Pan in a Pickle at Sherwood Park Special School in Wallington on May the 31st and June the 1st. Ms. Rhodes Steer stressed volunteers are always welcome and can contact her on 01372 278021.
Rambling Radio has celebrity in region. Claire Balding visited Reigate to record an edition of the popular BBC Radio 4 programme Ramblings on Bank Holiday Monday. Claire has joined many notable people for a walk through the countryside as part of the popular programme that has been running since 1999. This time, Ramblings was interviewing members of the Walk With Us project, run by the Gatwick Detainees Welfare Group. It organises walks with people who have experienced immigration detention. Claire joined the group for a walk, and while enjoying the sunshine, they chatted about a range of topics. Gatwick has two immigration removal centres, one at Tinsley House and another one at Brook House. The Gatwick Detainees Welfare Group is a group of around 50 volunteers who were formed in 1995 when Tinsley House was built. The charity visits and supports those who are detained at the centre. Mary Barrett, who lives in Reigate, has visited the detention centre for more than 20 years and said, "I find the walking days very moving. It is a joy to walk and talk and share our beautiful countryside with former detainees."
Residents dig deep for the RNLI. The Royal National Lifeboat Institution has collected £1,022 in Epsom. Of this, £363 was collected in the Ashley Centre, where volunteers were out with collection tins on Saturday, May the 5th. Funds raised will contribute towards the cost of a new kit for lifeboat crew. Founded in 1824, the 24-hour rescue service has saved more than 142,200 lives, and they also have a flood rescue team to help communities in times of crisis.
Shop opens at recycling. Bargain hunters and lovers of bric-a-brac take note. Leatherhead Community Recycling Centre has launched a shop. A Revive Reuse shop has opened at the Randall's Way rubbish tip. The shop looks set to be a treasure trove of interesting items, selling everything from furniture, TVs and crockery to bikes, golf clubs and DVDs. Local charities benefit and visitors to Revive shops can vote for their favourite charity to receive a share of the proceeds. The recycling centre is open Monday to Thursday, 8 a.m. until 4 p.m, closed on Fridays, and open weekends 9 a.m. until 4 p.m.
When pressure gets too high. Hawthorne Pharmacy in Epsom is offering free walk-in blood pressure checks to raise awareness of hypertension. The pharmacy, located at Hawthorne Local Centre in Epsom, is taking part in May Measurement Month. The idea is not only to raise awareness of hypertension, but to also gather evidence which can influence health officials. Sean Dev, pharmacist and Hawthorne Pharmacy owner, said his team offer blood pressure screening all year round, but are eager to support the initiative. He said, "We're not just here to offer packets of pills. We offer services like blood pressure screening and can offer health advice without the need for an appointment. It only takes a few minutes to have your blood pressure checked, and it's in the unlikely event there is an issue, we can refer you on to get the right support. As well as running checks in the pharmacy, there are also plans to take blood pressure readings at the Rainbow Leisure Centre. May Measurement Month is organised by the International Society of Hypertension, ISH, and is backed by the National Pharmacy Association, NPA. Stephen Fishwick of the NPA said checking patients' blood pressure is a relatively simple intervention that can save lives. The NPA believes that community pharmacy should play a far greater role in screening and ultimately managing hypertension. Complications from high blood pressure can cost the NHS £2 billion a year and make up 12% of all the GP appointments, but we want to change that. Many of our members already offer blood pressure checks, and the NPA is working hard to enable community pharmacy to do more in this area. Last year, during May Measurement Month, 1.2 million people in 100 countries were checked as part of the initiative. For more information about the campaign, visit maymeasure.com.
It's an honour to be on this project. People with disabilities in Leatherhead have been enlisted to help with the assembly of a commemorative World War I figurine following overwhelming demand, with thousands being sold in just a few days. Britain's bravest manufacturing company has a factory in Kingston Road and is owned by military and disability charity Royal British Legion Industries. It employs 30 people, more than 95% of whom have a disability. The team have been tasked with packaging Perspex Tommy figures of First World War soldiers following the successful February launch of There But Not There, a national campaign commemorating the centenary of the Great War. Volunteer Andrew Middleton, aged 65, who uses a wheelchair as a result of spina bifida, said, "It is a huge honour to be working on such a project. The Tommy figures pay homage beautifully to the service personnel who gave their all. We can't help but think about their sacrifices as we pack them away. It's very moving." The main Kent factory, which employs both armed forces veterans and people with disabilities, originally secured the deal through a competitive tender. However, both sites will now rally together after almost 40,000 figures were sold in just 2 days. Jeff Streetley, managing director of Britain's bravest manufacturing company, said, "The reaction to the There But Not There campaign has been nothing short of phenomenal. There is clearly an immense public appetite to commemorate the First World War, and we are extremely proud to have both of our sites playing such an active role in that. Our Leatherhead team are a prime example of a section of society who unfortunately are far too often written off when it comes to employment. Yet, as we have seen with this project, when they are given the opportunity, they can go above and beyond to achieve fantastic results. That is what really drives Britain's bravest manufacturing company, the understanding that enterprises can be both commercially sustainable and also committed to social values. BBMC's Surrey site specialises in printing, mailing and fulfilment services, with customers including Mole Valley District Council, the Children's Trust and BMW Vines. To buy your own commemorative Tommy figurine, visit therebutnotthere.org.uk.
Hospice nets £18,000 from runners. Seven supporters of a cancer charity have helped fundraise more than £18,000 after running in the hottest London marathon on record. The runners ran the 26-mile route for St Raphael's Hospice, based in London Road, at what was also the largest, after more than 40,000 people participating. It follows after a group of 18 volunteers completed a punishing trek of Peru, which helped raise more than £50,000. Michelle Baldwin, who ran her second marathon for the charity, said, "The London Marathon was really tough this year with the heat and the water shortage, but every time I felt like quitting, I thought of my dad and St. Raphael's. The importance of this got to me in the end. I met up with Pepper Pig at mile 25 and we finished together. It didn't feel impossible I would finish, let alone with a legend like Pepper. It was a great day." St. Raphael's Hospice, which needs £5.8 million a year to run, serves residents in both Sutton and Merton with palliative care. The charity has been offering support to people in both boroughs since April 97. Lucia Hurd, community events and fundraiser for St. Raphael's, said, "It was a fantastic day and I am so proud of all our incredible runners, especially for running in the heat. I'm sure it will be a day that none of them will ever forget."
Now for some letters, and this one, the name and address was supplied. Article was all about how wonderful we all are. I read with interest and dismay the above article in the Epsom Guardian on the 19th of April. I have to ask the question, does Councillor Kingston have any idea of what actually occurs in Epsom? I have been the victim of ASB, harassment, criminal damage and assault from a neighbour for approximately 7 years. One assault resulted in an injury that has caused a permanent disability which resulted in the loss of employment. The response from EEBC is that the advice I have received from the government ministers and government agencies such as DEFRA is that the information is inaccurate and or not relevant. When I was advised to request that the community trigger be implemented, I was told, "We're not taking any more incident reports from you." I was further advised by the CPS that all reported behaviour is normal family life. According to Surrey Police, incidents are reported and are criminal offences and harassment, but I require totally independent evidence, i.e. friends, family and even a gardener, that are not suitable as witnesses. This is a total impossibility when the offences occur within the vicinity of one's own front and rear gardens. If on my own, out in the street, when an incident occurs, no action can be taken because there are no witnesses. Again, according to Surrey Police, CCTV is not suitable evidence because, I quote, "You can't make identifications just because you know who he or she is if you're not an independent." According to Surrey Police, a child under the age of 10 years is not responsible for their actions. This is common knowledge. And their parents are not responsible for their behaviour, even when the above-mentioned injury was caused by one such child. According to Surrey Police, there is no such law as parenting orders. I have attached a copy of the legal explanation. I live in constant fear of harm to myself and or damage to my property, and as a retired pensioner of nearly 70 years of age, female and living on my own, this is merely an existence and not a decent way within which to live. My house is, according to an estate agent, virtually unsaleable, as I would have to declare the problems. In conclusion, the article, in my opinion, is more of a look at how wonderful we are statement without any intention to actually improve the lives of Epsom residents. I would happily meet with Councillor Kingston.
And now a happier letter about a mum with dementia who has had great care from the staff. My mum, Rosie French, had dementia for 13 years. My daughter and I cared for her while we were trying to work. For the last 5 years of my mum's life, I had to put her into a care home, which broke my heart. But caring for someone with dementia is the hardest thing I ever had to do. I lost my mum twice. I ended up putting my mum in Brendan Care Ronald Gibson House in Tooting. The first thing I noticed was that it was very clean. I visited my mum 7 days a week and worked with the carers to make my mum happy. The care and love that my mum got was the best. They loved my mum like she was their own. I want everyone to know about the incredible care my mum received, and I need the carers to know how thankful I am. They work 12-hour shifts, and to work with people with dementia, you need to have a big heart. My mum sadly died at 83 in January 2018. Her funeral was on Wednesday, February the 14th, and we drove up to the care home so she could say her last goodbye. It was so nice to see carers coming out to say goodbye, and some even attended the funeral. I want people to know how hard it is to care for someone with dementia, and I want everyone to know about the care home and its lovely carers.
Now, an appeal to help trace a family. I am trying to trace the family of George William and Millicent Mary Dawes, who had three children, Kathleen, Russell and Clifford. Kathleen married Maurice Sargent and had two children, Maurice and Lorna, and Lorna married Alan Haynes. Russell married Joyce. Clifford married Karen and they had two children, Lee and Paul. The families appear to have lived in the Tadworth, Banstead and Epsom areas of Surrey, but may have moved. If anyone can help trace any of these members of the Dawes family, I'll be very much obliged. Please contact me at Pam Wilson, that's all one word, 10 as in 10, at tiscali.co.uk. And finally, a letter from Mrs. Savage of Croydon. I got great care. In January, during the negative publicity about the NHS and its response to the winter pressure, I found a lump in my breast. The response from the Marsden, my GP, Croydon Hospital and Macmillan were magnificent. I have just finished a course of radiotherapy. I was treated quickly, with the utmost care and respect. I cannot praise and thank everyone who has helped me through a difficult time enough.
This concludes the news section of today's recording. The magazine section will follow after the introductory music.